We begin the current daf mesef from the darim daf mem ches. We begin on the bottom of daf mem zayin mabez. Four lines up in the bottom of the yamid. The gemara continues with the next mishnah. Again, continuing the theme of this parak regarding when one person is forbidden from the other and they're both shutfen, they're both partners in the same thing. What do we do in those types of situations? So the mishnah says, harein yolecha cherem. If someone tells his friend that I am to you like cherem, in other words, as the Ram points out, it's Tolman the area of the Galil, which we mentioned on Daf Yud Ches and Beis in the Galil, when the person just used the generic word cherem, which although can mean cherem for kahanim, which has a different halacha, in the Galil, when you use the generic term cherem, it means in reference to the bedek habayis, which is like hekdesh. So essentially, which is for the upkeep of the temple. So essentially, it's like someone saying that the pleasure that you would have from me is like cherem, is like hekdesh. So essentially, he's making a kainim to that other person. So hamudar also. So the subject of the neder, which is the person that he's saying is forbidden to have an offer from him, like cherem, is going to be forbidden to have an offer from him. The other way also, hari'at alai. If you are, meaning the pleasure of this other person, he's saying is on me, like a cherem, then hanoidir also, then the one taking the vow is forbidden because he's making the other person forbidden on himself. Now, if he says, hari'ni alecha v'at alai, that I am on you like cherem, and you are on me like cherem, well, then Shnei Masrim, now they're both forbidden to have enough from each other because this one person said that he's like a cherem, the other person's a cherem on him, so he can't have from him. And he also said that he is like a cherem on that other person, so now that person can't have enough from him. So although they're forbidden to have enough from each other, but Vishneim mutarim bedavar shel oilei bava, both of them are permitted to have enough from those things which are from what's called the oilei bava, those who went up with Ezra from Bavel, from Galus Bavel, to build the second base of Mikdash, which those who came up, they declared certain items hefker for the entire Jewish people. It's ownerless in the sense of that no one owns it, so therefore neither one of these are the owner, so everyone could have enough from it. However, as we continue on to the top of Mechasim and Aleph, but Vasurim Bedavar Shel Oseir, now both of these people are forbidden to partake of anything which is owned by the city that they live in. The reason being is because no other city has rights in these objects and these places of these city dwellers. Moreover, is that the what's called the Taiva Ha'ir, these are like the committee members that run the city, they are allowed to sell these items with the consultation of the board of the entire city. So essentially what that means to say is that it's owned, but it's owned by everyone in the city. So it comes out that these two individuals who live in the city are, let's say there's 200 people in the community or 2,000, there are two of those members. So neither one of them could have anah from any one of these objects owned by the municipality, by the city, which they're part owners, because now they're having anah, although it might be 1/200th, but they would be having anah from that other person, and they're forbidden, like cherem, so now neither one of them could have anah from objects of that city. So the Mishnah explains, Vezehu davar shel oilei bava, what are considered items that are from those who came up from Bavel, which are considered hefker, which they could have anah from, meaning it's not owned by everyone, rather it's owned by nobody. Kugan Harabais, for example, the Temple Mount, Vahazaris, and the courtyards on the Temple Mount, Vahabar Shabem Saderach, or a pit of water on the road up between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, which those who came up from the Gullahs, they made these things that no one owns it, and they were saying that no one could acquire it, it's hefker for everybody, so therefore it's ownerless and they could have anah from it. But ve'ezehu davar shel oseir, what's considered an object of that city, meaning that everybody owns it from that city. Hence, neither one could have anah from it because the other person that's the cherem to him is considered an owner who can't have anah from it. So it's kigayin harachava, like the town square, the hamerchatz, or the bathhouse, or basic knesses, the shul, the teva, or the place where you put the sefer Torah, the hasvarim, or the books that are read from. These are owned by everybody, so therefore neither one of these two people could have anah from it because it's everybody's, including the person that's forbidden to have anah from. Now the Mishnah tells us, v'akosiv chelko l'nasi, and somebody writes his portion in these city parts to the nasi. Now the Gemara is going to explain that actually what the Mishnah is saying here, not like the Gemara is going to assume in its question, which it sounds like from a simple reading that that's what the Mishnah is saying, sounds like that these are the things that are forbidden. For example, someone that writes his portion in the city, like let's say into the shul or the merchatz or the town square, he writes it over to the nasi, and that would be forbidden, which the Gemara is going to ask on that. Actually, the Mishnah is saying now, what should they do now that they're stuck? So they just wanted to make each other forbidden, but little did they know that now they can't use any of the municipal types of objects too, like the shul and the bathhouse and the town square. So what they do now is then they each write that their part that they have in the shul, they write it over to the Nasi, to the one who runs all the affairs of the Jewish people. And then it's going to be permitted for either one to use it, as we learn later in the next Mishnah, that what do you do if someone's forbidden as a neder to the other person, but he wants him to be able to have enough from him, which is like these two people, neither one can use the shul now, because each one would be having enough from the other one. So each one says, you know what, you're not having enough from me, and therefore you could come into the shul, because my part that I own in the shul, I'm giving over to the Nasi. And so too does the other person, and therefore then they're going to be permitted, because they're not getting it from the other one, because each one gave their portion to the Nasi, they're instead getting it from the Nasi. Now, in this halacha of writing over his shir of the Merchatz, the Beis HaKnesses, the town square, the Ark, the Svarim, on that there's a machlokes in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda, he says, that actually, this halacha that we said, that the way out is to write over your part, your shir, and this municipal things are to write it to the Nasi, is actually Echad Kais of the Nasi, Echad Kais of the Hadid. It's actually whether you write it to the Nasi, I write over my shears in the shul. It's whether you give it to the Nasi or to a common man. Now, but Mabin Kaisel the Nasi the Kaisel. And then what is the difference? Why did we use that as the paradigm, as writing it to the Nasi, if there's no difference? Is that there is a subtle difference, that a Shai Kaisel the Nasi in Sarach Lezakis. Because the reason why we choose to say that you write over to the Nasi is because you don't have to acquire it for the Nasi. And that is, although generally when you want to give someone to something, you have to then give it to someone else who could then be makabalit and be zeichen it, because when it's a merit, when it's a schus, someone else could do it for that person. But regarding the Nasi, right when the person writes that document, the Nasi has already acquired it, even though he didn't give it to someone else to acquire it for the Nasi. And the reason being is, as the Rishayim explained, because the Nasi has a more power of authority than regular people, so just having it written over, he's already going to get it. Whereas Lahed Yitzhak Lazakis, whereas if you want to do it, you could do the same thing by giving it over, say, I write over my shears in the shul and the bathhouse and everything to this and this person, then you would at least have to give it over the document to that person or to someone else to get it for him. So therefore we say the simpler way is to just write over to the Nasi. Now the Chachamim, they say differently. They say that no, Echad Zeh Ve'Echad Zeh Tzrich Lazakis. That not only for the Hedyid, but even for the Nasi, someone has to, you can't just write it, you have to give it over to someone to acquire it for the Nasi. But the reason why they chose, when they explained the halacha that you write over your shir to someone else, they picked the Nasi, is because that's more commonplace. And the reason why it's more commonplace that people would write over to the Nasi and not some other person is because no one is so reliable and you would feel comfortable giving over your shears in the shul or the bathhouse to somebody else, because they're afraid if they give over their shir to that person, he has rights over them, because it's their shears that he has now, and he might make it forbidden to them. Say, yeah, I have your shears in the shul, you can't come to shul anymore. And therefore, they write it to the Nasi, who the Nasi is someone that cares about and runs the whole town and community, and therefore, he's not going to go ahead and make it forbidden for a Jew to come into the shul or to the bathhouse or the town square, and therefore they choose it to do it for the, to write it to the Nasi. Now, that the Ran asks, that according to the Rabbanan, the Chachamim, that they say that whether you write it to the Nasi or to a regular person, you have to have it acquired to him. So then what is the chiddush of the Mishnah? The basic halacha that's being said according to the Chachamim, we already learned two times in Mishnayos, that when you give something to someone else for a gift, then the other person could get it. In other words, you can give it to someone else. There's a mudar that you can't give to, so you can give it to someone else, who then could give it to that person. And that's essentially the same halacha that we're saying over here, according to the Chacham. In other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's a chiddush in our Mishnah, where that you don't have to actually even give it to the Nasi, and still that other person that's forbidden to have enough from you, just by your writing it, can now have enough from the shul and from the bathhouse. But according to the Rabbanu, what's the chiddush? We had a previous Mishnah, and then the coming Mishnah that's going to say the same idea. If someone else is forbidden to have enough from you, you can give it to someone else. That's what you're doing through the Nasi. But you still have to have it zeichet for him. You have to have it acquired to him, just like in a regular person. So that the Ran says that the chiddush according to the Chachamim in our Mishnah is that even though that this person who's writing away his shears, he's actually not giving away his shear, because he's still using the shul like he always did, and therefore how can now that person go ahead and use the shul too? if he's forbidden to have enough from him, and he obviously still has his shear, and that's what the chiddush of the Mishnah is saying, that it's not considered harama, which we'll see in the next Mishnah, subterfuge is forbidden when we see that, hey, he didn't really give it away. And here essentially also, you didn't really give it away to the Nasi because he's still coming to shul. You're obviously still utilizing your shear. That's the chiddush that know that you did give it away to the Nasi, but the Nasi, through his kindness, his taivas ayin, says, no worry, you could still come into the shul, I let you come in, even though it's not your shear, and he's not making forbidden on that person, and that's why the other person could also come in, because it's not having enough from that other person, because it's not that other person's shear anymore. Now, parenthetically, the Ran points out that our Mishnah that says that they're forbidden to use anything from the city is obviously going like Rabban and not like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, as we said previously, because one of the examples is a shul, and a shul is like a chatzur that doesn't have a din chalukah, because it's not going to be end up splitting up, because every single person has a share, and no one could force to like split up the shul into pieces. Now, therefore, since the Gemara Paskin previously, that halacha is like a blazer ben Yaakov, obviously the halacha of our Mishnah is not lamaskana, because our Mishnah is going like those who argue in blazer ben Yaakov, and the halacha is like a blazer ben Yaakov. And therefore, the Ran wonders, according to the Rambam, why does he bring down the halacha of our Mishnah, which is not a libid de hilchasa, because the Paskin not like this Mishnah, like a blazer ben Yaakov. And the Mishnah concludes, however, Behuda Eimah, he says, that ein anshe galil tzrichen lichter. Although there is this halacha that if people make a neder, then they're going to be forbidden each other from the shul, but there's a way out by writing over your things, your shears, to the nasi. And Rabbi Yehuda says that the people of Galil don't even have to write. And the reason is, shekvar kosu avisein al yedem, because their fathers already indoctrinated that it's already written over all their things, meaning no one owns the shul anymore, no one owns the bathhouse. It's all owned by the Nasi, as Gemara will explain. Now, first the Gemara asked the question that we alluded to already in the explanation of the Ran. The question is, Amai Mitzer, why is it, which it sounds like from the simple translation of the continuity of the Mishnah, when it talks about that they're both forbidden, when each one is a cherem on the other one. So he said that Dvarm Shel Oiseir, like the town square and the bathhouse and the shul, are now forbidden to each other because each one has a share in it. So after the last example of Asvarm was Vakosiv Chelkel Nasi, when someone writes over his portion to the Nasi, then he's forbidden in Dvarm Shel Oiseir. And that the Gemara's question is, Amai Mitzah, why if he writes over his shear in the shul to the Nasi, did that suddenly make him forbidden to use the things of the shul? So then Amar Sheshes says, no, Hachikitan, this is what the Mishnah is saying. Umatakantan, this that we said that these two people are forbidden to use the objects of the city because each one is a part owner in these municipal objects. That is what the Mishnah then says. And what should they do that they should not be forbidden to use the shul and the bathhouse? That is what the Mishnah says. The takana is yichdibu chalkan l'nasi. The way out is by writing their shears to the nasi. Then neither one of them owns the shul or the bathhouse, and therefore then each one could go ahead and use it because they're not using it from that person. They're using it from everyone else in the city and from the nasi. Now the Gemara then continues quoting the halacha of our Mishnah, which it's brought into Gilead, and that it's obviously seemingly unnecessary to say this, but that's what we said in the Mishnah. So regarding this halacha, we had a machloikish, Rabbi Yehuda, he says, Echad keislav nasi ve'echad keislav hedyet. This halacha of writing over your shear applies whether it's to the nasi or to a common man. Uma bein keislav nasi le'keislav hedyet. Then what is the difference? Why do we pick that we say that to write over to the nasi? It's because at keislav nasi in tzarech lezakis, when you're writing over to the nasi, you don't have to acquire it to him. You could just write the document and it's done. But by keislav hedyet tzarech lezakis, when you're writing over to a common man, you have to have him acquire it. You have to give it to somebody to acquire it for that person for it to be valid that it's not your shear anymore in the shul and the bathhouse. But for chachamim, they argue and they say, no, echad zeh ve'echad zeh tzarech lezakis. Both of them, you have to be mezakis to them, even the nasi. So then why do we choose the nasi as the example? It's because le'dibri b'nasi el-bahi, because that's the more common example. Because him, you know that he's not going to make it forbidden on you. But if you write over to someone else, you gave him your share in the shul, he might now make you forbidden to come in because he has your share in the shul. Now the Mishnah concluded by Rabbi Yehuda. He said that ein anshe gilul tzrichen lezakis, that the people of the gilul don't even have to acquire it, their shears in the shul and all the municipal objects to the nasi. And the reason is shekvar kasu avasein al yedem, because their fathers already did it for them. As the Gemara explains, Tanya learned the Braisa. Behuda Aimi, he says, Anshe Galil kantaronin hayu. The people of Galil, they would get mad fast. Now, the problem with that is, v'hayu neidrin hanozim izah. So, of course, they got upset at people very fast. So they would say, you know what, you can't have, I'm taking a ned, you can't have any pleasure from me. Now, that's problematic. Because anytime someone makes a neder, that makes it forbidden for that other person to have any shear in any shul or bathas, because that person is a part owner in all these different things. So Amdovay saying, because of Chalkein Lanasi. So what did their fathers do? Their fathers went and wrote off everyone's portion in the city to the Nasi, and therefore each one are going to be able to have Hanav from all these different things, because although they're forbidden to have Hanav from that person, but that doesn't include all the municipal things, because now no one owns it besides the Nasi. Now the Gemara continues the next Mishnah, again continuing in the theme of the previous Mishnah, which we said that the way out of a problem when you have a mother and a mudr, that someone can't have enough from the other person, is to give it over to someone else, like in the previous Mishnah of giving it to the Nasi. So similarly, our Mishnah says the same thing. Now the Ran points out that this same exact Mishnah was taught already in Daf Mem Gimel at Aleph. This halacha that when you have a mother and a mudr, that you could give it to someone else, and then he could get from that other person, and that won't violate the neder. Now the reason why it's repeated over here is only because of a new insight regarding this halacha, what's called hoichich seif al tchilasa. If the end result proves undoubtedly that the whole purpose of giving to the other person was just one big subterfuge to circumvent the neder, but it's obvious it's not really giving it to the other person, that then it's going to be forbidden, and then it won't help to give it to someone else. As the Mishnah says, Hamudr hano mecha veiroi ve'in lo mayoichel. If someone is forbidden because of a neder to have pleasure from his friend, and now he has nothing to eat, and the mother wants to give him, but he can't because he's forbidden based on a vow to give him any pleasure. So it gives it to somebody else as a gift. Now the mudr can go to that person and get, because he's not getting it from the mother, he's getting it from that other person. Now, there was an incident with an individual from Beis Charan, such a place, and the gear says, mudr heimenu hanot. This person had his father forbidden because of a neder to have pleasure from him. Now, the problem is, now the mother, the one who made a neder against his father, was marrying off his own son. And he wanted his father to come to his grandchild's chasna. So Va'amalachavir said to his friend, look, chatzir, the whole courtyard, and besuda, and the whole party, the whole meal, nesunim heinun lefanecha, they're given to you. Or as some have the girsa, einun lefanecha. As we're going to see, the primacy of this concept is that he was saying that, I'm really not giving it to you. I'm only giving it to you, elo kadesha yovei abba v'yoich leman besuda. Either that heinun lefanecha, that they're yours, or they're not yours, they're really not yours. But the main idea is that Allah, because really what I'm giving it to you for, I don't really want to give you the whole, you know, much money I invested in this wedding. I'm only giving it to you so that my father could come and eat by us by the meal, because if it's my suda, he obviously can't because he's mudrana. But it's yours. He could come to your party, and therefore he'll be able to come to my son's wedding. So this friend said, oh, im shalihim? You're giving me the whole hole and all the food? I'm making a hekdesh for heaven. It's all Hashem's now. So Amalei, so the Baal Simcha said to him, what? Nasati locha shalish hekdeshim l'shamayim? What do you think? I gave you all my stuff so that you should make it hekdesh? So Amalei, so his friend responded to him, wait a second. Nasati li ashalcha, you gave me your stuff. Why did you give it to me? Why do you give it to me? Because you wanted to celebrate and eat and drink and be married with your father by your son's wedding. And that the sin should be on my head. Because, yes, you obviously did not plan on giving it to me. And if you didn't, then your whole trick doesn't work, because it's obvious that you're doing it just to get your father to have enough from you, but you can't, so you're, so to speak, giving it to me. And as the Mishnah concludes, Amar Chacham, the sages said, Kol matana she'ena, any gift that's not, in other words, that it's not really in the domain of the one who's receiving the gift, like this friend of this Baal Simcha, that is she'emekdisha te'emukdeshes, that if he wanted to make it hektish, that it should be kadosh, that's not how much he had it. Like we see, he said, I didn't give it to you to make it hektish. Then eina matana, well then that's not a gift, the joke is up, it's one big sham, obviously you can't do that, and that wouldn't allow the father to come and eat by that simcha. Now, the Ran's Girsa is actually one word differently, not that that as we have in our Girsa, komatana she'ena she'imikdisha tehemukdeshes, rather his Girsa is komatana she'ena, any gift that's not, meaning she'imikdisha enemukdeshes, he has the word ena, because that if the person would make it kaddish, hektish, sanctified, that it would not become kaddish, then that's not a gift. In other words, as the Ran explains, What the Mishnah is coming to say is that although there is halacha, what's called matona manas lahachza, if someone gives someone a gift, many do this by the halacha of a lulav on the first day when it has to be yours, but so therefore you can't borrow it from someone. So you do what's called matona manas lahachza. You give him a gift, it's yours, but on condition that you give it back to me. Now, although that's actually considered a gift, and it is that person's, and it's mekayim lachem, now, that's in spite of the fact that even if that person who got that gift that has to be returned, if he made it hekdesh, it would not be kaddish, as the Gemara says in Masechtas Baba Basra, because it was with that intention that I gave it to you that you'll return to me, and therefore if you make it hekdesh, you're not going to be able to return to me, and therefore it's not kaddish, because it's only something that's fit for me that I told you has to be returned to me. So on that, the Ran says that that halacha is different, because at least for the moment when the person has that gift, when he has that lulav, it is a gift. But it's just that he can't do certain things with it. But this gift of this individual, Beis Chayron, even momentarily for the wedding, it wasn't a gift because he didn't intend to gift it to him at all. He just wanted it to be your party so that his father could have pleasure from it. Now that's why the Ran says, that's the reading of the words of the Mishnah, that it says, interesting way of saying it, kol matana she'eina, any gift that's not. What does that mean? She'im ekdesha in the mekdesh, is that if the person would make it kaddish, the one who's receiving it, he wouldn't be able to. It doesn't say what would seemingly be a simpler wording, that kol matana she'im ekdesha in the mekdesh, is any gift that if he would sanctify it, it wouldn't be mekdesh. It's not a matana. Why does it say first that kol matana she'eina? Because that's what the Tan is trying to say. He's trying to say that any gift she'eina that's not, I mean that's nothing. It's because at least matana manas lahachzer is something, even though you can't be makdish it. So the fact that you can't be makdish it, obviously it's not the defining factor. But here the idea is because it's harama, one big joke, one big subterfuge. Because yes, in this case, it's just indicating from the fact that if he wanted to be makdish it, he couldn't it, then it's totally not a matana, as we see, because he only gave it to him just for namesake, but he really wasn't giving him anything, whereas at least a matana manas lahachzer, the reason why he can't be makdish is for a different reason. Because then you won't be able to fulfill the return of the matana. But the matana was a full matana. Here it's nothing, and we see that from the fact that it can't be makdashit, and therefore it was not a good eitzah to be able to allow that person's father to come to his grandson's wedding. Now, the Gemara wonders, interestingly, that Maisa Lister, it sounds like that you're quoting a story that contradicts the halacha. First, we start off in the Mishnah halacha. If someone's mudr hanav from someone else, there's a way around it. Give it to someone else, who then he could get from that person. And then the Gemara brings a story. And what does the story say? The exact opposite. It says that you can't give it to someone else. Now, as the Ran explains, it's not a contradicting the halacha that it opens up with. Because obviously there is a difference between the opening halacha and the story. Because by the story he said, I'm only giving it to you so that my father could come to the party. And that doesn't contradict the opening halacha. The opening halacha was when you're really giving it to that other person. You just want someone else to get it. What the Gemara means to ask when it says that it's a contradictory story is because since the Tana opens up with that giving to someone else would be a permission to allow someone else that's mudur to have an offerman, so the Gemara's question is, so why does the Mishnah then bring a story that tells us that it's forbidden when you give it to someone else? Because generally, when the Tana brings a halacha and then it brings a story, generally the story supports that same halacha. So although it's not really contradicting, but why bring down a story that is saying at least definitely a different type of halacha, where generally the story is supporting the previous halacha that was first said? So on that, the Gemara answers, no, chesor mechshav ha'katan, that word's missing, and this is what it's supposed to say. And then we'll understand how it's actually supporting the same halacha that was first said. And that is that what the Mishnah is supposed to say is that yes, it's permitted to give to someone else to then allow the mudu to give from that person. But on that is what the Mishnah is supposed to say. But if the end proves regarding the beginning, in other words, if we could tell from the end of this story that the whole point of it was just as subterfuge to allow the mudr to get from the madr, then that's going to be asa. Then that's going to be forbidden. And that's what the Mishnah says. For example, because that's exactly what happened to Beis Chayron. Where that was exactly what happened, where the end clarified for us really what the whole intention was from the beginning. Where since he ultimately ended up saying, although when he first said that it's yours, so that would sound like that would be a good way, but since he ended up saying, I'm only giving it to you so that my father could come and it's not yours to be able to be makdashid, So then obviously then when you gave it to that person, it was one big joke, and if it's not going to work for what the first part of the Mishnah said by giving it to someone else to allow the mudah to come. Now, however, but if he didn't say explicitly, like the beginning of the Mishnah, where you just say here, you can have it, although it's obvious from the interactions and from the transactions that he's only giving it that the mudah could have, that's the Mishnah, that the opening halacha in the Mishnah, that would work, that would be a good gift to allow the mudah to get it. But when it's obvious that it's coming to do that, when it's almost explicitly, where although you're not doing it with words, but you're saying that you're only giving it to that person so that its father should come, well then that's obviously saying that the whole thing's one big sham, and that's why it's not going to work. Now, the Gemara qualifies this halacha, and Amar Rav Rava says, Lai Shana, we didn't learn like this Maisen Beis Chayrin where his Chiyach Sevet Chlasai, that's going to be forbidden and it's not going to work doing it through a third party, is El De Amar Lai, it's only that if he tells him like the way he was quoted, is Ve'enon Lefanecha, or like other Rishonim have Ve'enon Lefanecha, that it's not really yours, or I'm giving it to you just, El Kadesh Yave Abba, so that my father could come, which that's a full-fledged condition. So that's obvious from the cipher, from the end of what you end up saying, to reveal regarding your original intentions that you really weren't gifting it to that person. You were just calling it on his name so that the father could come. Aval amaleshi lefanecha, but Rava says, if this Baal Simcha would have said that this whole party is yours, yes, the whole courtyard with all the food, it's yours. Sheyavai Abba, he doesn't say elekadesh yavai Abba, he says, and that so that my father could come, then Rava says, midai trehuda amale. Then essentially what he's telling to his friend is that that's up to you. In other words, it's not a condition in the gifting. It's a full gift. I'm giving you the whole simcha. It's just that if you want to, you can do that and invite my father to the party, which is similar to like it says in the Gemara Daf Chaf, where there the Gemara says, if someone said to somebody, give this young man 400 zuz, and Valinza Bartoy, and he should marry my daughter. Where there a papa says, the man takes the 400 zuz, and regards to the daughter, if he wants to marry her, he could. If he doesn't want to, he doesn't have to, because it wasn't with the words Ella. It wasn't qualifying that this is a condition in the gifting. It was Valinza Bartoy. Now, therefore, the same thing is also over here. When he says, V'yavai Abba, She'yavai Abba, that's saying that, and that my father could come. But it's not saying that's the only reason or how I'm giving you the gift. You're getting the whole thing. I want my father to come, and that's why I'm doing it. But it's not conditional in the gifting. That is something that Rava says would work, just like the halacha of when someone doesn't have, you give it la'achal shematana. That would have worked in Beis Charen. Lishna achrina amrin la, but there's a different version that says, actually, no. That Amar Rava says that loy teimetayma. Don't say the reason is why in the Maisa of Beis Charen that it didn't work. It's because the amalei v'heinan lefanecha, that because he told him that this is for you only, that my father could come. That is why Huda Aser, Aval amalei hein lefanecha. But had he said that it's yours, sheyavei abba v'yoichel, so that my father could come and eat, that then it would be mutter. Don't say that, meaning not like the first version that we had quoted in the name of Rava. Rather, Ella, the second version of Rava says, Afila amalei hein lefanecha yavei abba v'yoichel, even if he would have said that, look, this is all yours, and that my father could come and eat, and he didn't say with the words Ella or Ve'enon to make it conditional, still it's going to be Aser. My Tema, what's the reason according to the second version of Rava that even that case would be forbidden? The reason is because Sudasai Muchachas Alav. The whole wedding feast is indicative of what's really going on. And that is because you're right. Although generally when someone says the words V'yavai and that he could come, it's not conditional. Here it's different. Because we say testimony that somebody is not making a whole wedding feast to marry off his son, and then suddenly he's going to gift it all to somebody else. You could do whatever you want with it. Therefore, it's obvious from the wedding feast. What really is happening is that he's telling him that, look, I'm only giving it to you so that my father could come. I'm not really giving it to you. And because of that, even though he didn't say those words, but actions speak louder than words, and we know really what he's doing. And therefore, the second version of Rava says that Beis Charen wouldn't have worked even in that type of a way. Because it's obvious that it's one big haram, one big subterfuge, and since he's not really giving it to the other person, it doesn't help. It's still considered his. It's just he's calling it to the other person's, and therefore the father would not have been able to come even in such a situation. Now we continue on to Talmud Beis, where the Gemara continues with the following incident that relates to the halacha that we just spoke about. Hahu gavra dehavalei bra. There was a certain man that had a son. Davashamit kipei dechisna, that his son was stealing bundles of flax. It was embarrassing to the father. So asrin lenichse aleh, he said, you're a thief, you're a bandit. He made all his properties forbidden to this son. Now amrulei, but the people around this man said to him, but v'ihav yabar baruch tzuvim rabban amai, what's going to happen if your grandson, meaning, yes, you're very displeased with this son that he's a thief, but what's going to happen if his son's going to be a Talmudic scholar? What's going to be with him? Why are you taking away your inheritance that you would give to this son because of the bad ways that he's done, but maybe his son's going to be good? And because now you're not giving it to the son, the grandson, who might be a Talmudic scholar, is not going to get anything. Now, the Ram points out an obvious question, and that is that even if the father's making it forbidden to his son, but what's the Gemara's question? What are they asking to this person? The grandson still would have gotten that inheritance. And the reason being is because, as we learned earlier, that when someone makes his estate forbidden on his son, although we use the words that he doesn't inherit him, we said that he inherits it, he just can't have pleasure from it, even though the actual estate actually still goes to him, even if he says that you're forbidden in my estate, b'chayi u'b'maisi, where, as the Mishnah says in Masechtas Baba Kama and Daf Kaf Tes Amud Aleph, that he could give it to his sons or to his brothers, and therefore, since that's the case, so the grandson would inherit it, whether he's a Talmudic scholar or even Amma Oretz, and actually, even when he's still alive, if he wants to, he can give it to his son. He could give it away, as the Mishnah there teaches, and as we quote on the Mem Zayin and Aleph, he could give it to his sons or to his brothers. So what's the Gemara's question? What were they asking him and saying, whoa, you're not giving it to your son, you're making all your properties forbidden to him, even if he's forbidden to him and he can't have pleasure from it, but he really owns it and therefore he can give it to his brothers or to his son, so the grandson will get it either way. So what were they asking him? So Netaran says that this story was a specific case where this man had two sons, one that he was very proud of, and the other one who was this thief. Now, they realized regarding this father that he wanted to give all of his properties to the good son. And because of that, they told him, but what's going to be if your grandson from the bad son is going to be a Talmudic scholar? Why are you giving all your properties to that one son? You're right, if the bad son was the only son, his grandson would inherit it. But we're talking about there were two sons, and he's going to give everything away, which he could. And therefore, the bad son's not going to get anything. But the problem is, they said, but what's if your grandchild's going to be good? So in that, he responded, and he says, you're right. So Amal Haini said to them, Likni Hadain, let this, quote, bad son get his half of the inheritance, but only V'ihavye Barbarid Suvim Rabon Lekanyi, only if my grandchild, meaning his son, ends up being a Talmudic scholar, then I want my son to get that half. But if not, then I want all of the inheritance to go to the good son. That was what the story was. On that, the Gemara asks, my, what's the halacha? Does the bad son, so to speak, get the half if his son becomes a Talmudic scholar or not? So this is machlokes. Amri Pumbedisai, the people of Pumbedisa said, this is a case of Kani Amanas Lahaknesu, where he's saying that the son, the not good son, should get it only on the condition that he's going to give it over to someone else, to the good grandchild. Now, v'chol kani amanas lahaktis lo kani. Anyhow, any case where you're only getting it, but you're not really getting it, it's only getting it so that you should give it over to someone else, so that's not a kinyan in the first place, and therefore, the good grandchild is not going to get it because his father, the bad son, didn't get it. Now, the Ram points out, although, as we said before, that there is a halacha, that you could have something, even though it's not going to be yours forever, like in matan amanas lahaktis, when you could gift something to someone just for a short time, even though he has to give it back. So Netaran says there it's different because at least for those moments, like the case we said of the Lulav and Esrig, for those moments it's his and he could utilize it. But here, the father didn't give it to the son at all. He doesn't want him to have anything. He's a thief, he's a bandit. He's only giving it to his son so that when his grandchild becomes a Talmudic scholar, then he should get it. And the only way he could get it is if he gives it to the bad son to give it to his grandchild. Such a case, you can't be kinder because that's acquiring it, but not really acquiring it, only as a way of giving it over to someone else. That's something that doesn't work, and therefore, the Ram points out, never the good son is going to get all of the properties, because wherever the bad son doesn't get, the other one gets that properties. So the Pumbedisai said that son and his grandchild, even if he's a Talmud Chacham, is not going to get it. Rav Nachman Amakani, and Rav Nachman argues and he says that no, that the grandchild will acquire it. And the reason being is because even though the father is not giving it to this bad son at all, only to give it over to his son, which is Kanam Anas Lahaknis, that will work. And the proof Rav Nachman says is the Hasudra, Kanam Anas Lahaknisu. What's known in Halacha as a Kinyan Sudr, which is when someone wants to make a transaction, so there's different ways that a person can make an acquisition. It could be through money, it could be through Chazakah. So one of the ways is, or it could be Mashiach, by drawing something, or Agbah. One of the ways is that the one who wants to purchase, to acquire this item, he gives to the seller, he gives him his kerchief to the one who's selling it to him. Now, by giving that to that seller, so that's a transaction, just like what a sale is. So by giving him that, which is a kerchief, you get his item. That's the halach of a kinyan suda, that's a transaction. Now, that Rav Nachman says, although really when he's giving the kerchief to that seller, he's not giving him anything. In other words, he's only giving it to him, a kinyan of the suda, kedei lahaknois, so that he could get that person's field. And still we know in halacha that that's considered a kinyan, that is through the giving of the kerchief, he gets to purchase the field. Obviously, Rav Nachman says, a kinyan, which is the suda giving it to the machna, amanas lahaknis, as just a way of getting an acquisition, that it's going to work. And therefore he says that the grandchild, the good grandchild, does get it. Now that Amr Rav Ashi asked two questions of Rav Nachman, which is from Rav Nachman's comparison of what we're discussing over here of kinyan amanas lahaknis from the halacha of suda. First of all, he says, uman leimelon the sudra, who actually told you regarding that giving over the kerchief to the seller, that itof is le mitfis. Who said that if the seller wants to hold on and maintain the kerchief, that he can't? In other words, maybe if he wanted to, he could hold on to it. And the purchaser can't stop him from holding on to the kerchief. And therefore, what we could say is that that's just the custom. The custom is that, yes, of course, I'm being makna totally the kerchief to you. It's not just amanas that you give me the field, you get it. And that's why, since it's a full-fledged Kenyan, that's why I get the field back. It's just that the custom is, I don't need your kerchief. And therefore, the custom is to give back the kerchief. But if he wants to, he could hold on to it. And that's why it's going to be a full-fledged Kenyan through the Kenyan of Sudr. But here, in the case of the son, where he's not getting anything, where it's only a Kenyan amanas lahaknis, there, Rav Ashi says, that maybe the halacha would be that you can't do that. But don't bring a raya from Sudr, because Sudr actually is a full-fledged Kenyan. You actually get the Sudr, and it's not just as a medium to be makna. Void, moreover, a second question he asks, is Sudr koni amanas lahaknis v'koni, and even if we would agree to you, that that is what a Sudr is, like you're trying to compare of what we're discussing of a Kenyan only to be makna, and really maybe he can't hold on to the kerchief, but at least it's min hashta, at least it's from right now. In other words, that there's still a difference. Even if we said it's a kim anas lahaknis, there's still one fundamental difference between the sudr and between the case that we're discussing, and therefore there won't be a raya from the sudr to what we're discussing. Because by a sudr, the kinyan happens right now. In other words, before the makna, before the seller of the item, gives back the kerchief, when he still has the kerchief, at that moment is when the sale of his field happens to the lekach. But halin nichsin da hadain, however, over here, by these properties of the father and the bad son, la'emas kani, when would the grandchild, when would the son acquire it to give it to the good Talmudic scholar grandchild? That's l'chihava barbaretsu b'marabana. That's only when the grandchild ends up becoming a Talmudic scholar. Because generally, we're going to say that of course he's not giving it to the son. The only reason why he's giving it to the son was only for that moment when he's going to, when I know that the grandson is a Talmudic scholar. Now the problem is l'chihava, when that's going to be, Hadr Sudr Lamari. At that moment already, it's too late. Then the kerchief, or as the Ram points out, any kinyan, whatever the kinyan was, whether it's a kinyan of a sudr or of a chazaka, that already is already post the kinyan. The kinyan is not here anymore. And therefore, there's still a difference between sudr and between the case that we're discussing. Because here the kinyan is happening right now. But there's no real kinyan. Let's say they did some type of a kinyan to say, okay, this bad son will get it because when his grandchild is going to be good. But that, when is that really going to happen? The effect of the kinyan, the maisa kinyan is now, but the chalais of the kinyan is only going to be 20 years later and the grandchild's good. By that point already, the maisa kinyan is not there anymore. And that's why it can't take effect. But that is something you can't compare to a sudu, where even though that's kanyam anas lahaknes, the reason why that's going to work is because right now, when the kerchief is still in the hand of the seller, then, although even though it's only for the intention of doing the kinyan, but that's still different because it's happening right now. And since it's happening right now, so that's a kinyan that he has in the kerchief that could be almanas lahaknes. But regarding the case where they're discussing about hugavra, that's something that's not going to work. And therefore, it's going to be like the Pumbaa Desai and not like you, Rav Nachman, because at that point in time, it's already post the Maisa kinyan. And therefore, the Maisa kinyan can't work for the effect of the kinyan, which that it only has to be if the Maisa kinyan would still be extant. Now, however, the Rav Nachman obviously argues on this point of the questions of Rav Ashi. And Rav Nachman holds that kanyam anas lahaknes in all situations, not only like the way Rav Ashi is describing the Sudar, that it really is a kinyan, and even if it's not a real kinyan, but at least it's happening right now, Rav Nachman holds that any kanyam anas lahaknes is going to be kinyan. Now, that the Ran forewarns a question that seemingly Rav Nachman himself agrees to the principle of Rav Ashi's question that we just explained. Because Rav Nachman himself agrees that if someone is makna something to someone, that they do the maisa kinyan right now, but that the effect of the kinyan, the chalois, should only be 30 days later, that there is no such kinyan in that type of situation. Because Rav Nachman himself says in Perkei Shenaflu, in Subistav Pei Bezim and Aleph, that if someone tells his friend, okay, do the maisa kinyan now, do mashicha, draw the cow now, but I don't want the actual kinyan, which is the effect of the act of the acquisition, to take place until 30 days later, that he doesn't acquire it, because by the time that that the effect of the kinyan should take place, the maisa kinyan is not there anymore. Now, that is seemingly Rav Ashi's question on Rav Nachman, and yet we see Rav Nachman obviously is not bothered by that question, but Rav Nachman himself is the one that agrees to that halacha, and he says that if the maisa kinyan is now and the chaloisa kinyan is only 30 days later, that it doesn't work. So on that, the Ran explains that the understanding of Rav Nachman is that here, since he didn't say explicitly that the kinyan should only be when the grandchild is going to be a Talmudic scholar, he just says plain that, okay, fine, let this bad son get half the inheritance because maybe his child's going to be a Talmudic scholar. So therefore, the Ran explains, Rav Nachman's learning our case like when a person says, me'achshav ulechihavi. It's not just that the action should be now and the acquisition should be then. It's from now and by then. It's one long chalois kinyan, which is that the maisa is being done now, but the effect is happening now and throughout, and it's only concluded when the grandchild ends up becoming a Talmudic scholar. That's why even the Kodesh Rav Nachman, who holds that usually it doesn't work the way Rav Ashi is asking, here it would work. But Rav Ashi, who rejects Rav Nachman in the second question that we just described, he holds that no. Since the father obviously doesn't want to give the son anything, he's only giving it to him because of his grandson, so he says that the probability is when the father is giving over the acquisition to the son, the effect is only then, not now. And not like from now until then. And since it's only then, not now, so by the time then, which is when it should take effect, the maisa kinyan, the act of the kinyan, which is what the effect could take effect on, is not there anymore, because that was already a long time ago. And just like we said that a sudr would only work if it's when at least the seller has the sudr. But the reason why it works is because he didn't give it back yet. But that's not the same case as we have by Hu Gavra Dav Libra, where he didn't want to give it to the son that's stealing these bundles. And although he wants to give it to the grandchild, but since the Maisa Kinyan is now and the effect is only then, it can't take effect. So again, that's the Machlokes Rav Ashi and Rav Nachman, if it's comparable to sudr or not. Do we see it like Sudda that it's taking effect right now? And therefore, just like we see by Sudda that Kanyam Anas Lahaknes works, so too, like Rav Nachman says, it'll work over here in this case, where the grandchild will get it? Or is it like the Pumbaa Desayin, like Rav Ashi says that no, there's a fundamental difference between Sudda and the case we're discussing over here, because by Sudda, at least it happens then. But by the case over here, where it's not happening right now, it's only happening at a later point in time, because he doesn't want to give the son right now. He only wants to give it to him when his grandchild becomes a Talmud Chacham. Now the Gemara continues asking, only Rav or Rav Nachman. Rav asks a different question of Nachman. And that is, Rav Nachman holds that you could do kinyan amnas lahaknes. He asks, but matnas beischaran, but the halacha of our Mishnah, which is when this father of the chasen had a neder against his father, and he wanted him to come to the wedding, so he went and it was makna the whole suda of the wedding to someone else, where dekanyam anas lahaknes, who that was the same case of giving someone an acquisition, this other guy, his friend, with the intentions of only being maknet to the grandfather, and yet v'loy kokani, and yet there we see it didn't acquire. And the reason being, because if there would be such a thing as a kinyan like that, then the muder, meaning the father, should have been permitted to come to the wedding because there was someone in between. There was another step. Meaning to say, if you're saying that when you acquire something to someone with only the intention of having the other person get it from him, it's still considered like that person made a kinyan, and that's how he could pass it on to the next person. Like you're trying to say of Nachman in this case of the bad son getting it, and that's how he could give it over to his son, the grandson, because although the father doesn't want to give it to him, but he can get it to give it over to his grandchild. Well then, why by the story of Emaisa Beis Charin in our Mishnah did we say the father can't come? Why can't he come? It's a classical case of Kanyam and Asla Haknes. You're right, he wasn't giving it to the other person. He was just giving it to the other person so that the father could get it. But if Kanyam and Asla Haknes works, well then, it didn't come straight from the mother to the mother. It didn't come from the son to the father, meaning to the grandfather, the chassan. It went through this other person. And although it's not for his for keeps, but it doesn't make a difference. Kanyam and Asla Haknes, according to Rav Nachman, works. So Nedi Gemara says that Zimnan Amalei, sometimes Rav Nachman would respond to Rabba's question that with one answer and sometimes with another one. Sometimes he would say that the case of our Mishnah of Beis Charin is different, Mishum de Sudasei Mochachas Alav, because the wedding meal illustrates and it proves by itself that a person doesn't make a whole chasna wedding, which we know how much money that costs, to marry off his son and then give it away. The whole reason why he makes a wedding is to marry off his son. Therefore, it's obvious that the whole point is that it's really his. There is no, it's not even Kanya Manas Lahaknes. Because at least there you're giving it to the other person to give it to someone else. Here you're not giving it to him. You're not giving away the whole wedding you made for the son. Therefore, it's only subterfuge, like we said on the Manav, therefore it's going to be forbidden. That's the Ran's interpretation from his teachers. But in that, the Ran says that it's difficult for him, that interpretation. And the reason being is, because even if it is Muchach, let's say it's obvious that you're only giving it to that other person so that the grandfather could come to the wedding. But that's exactly the same case that Rav Nachman is illustrating by this guy. Meaning, what would Rav Nachman be answering to Rava, saying, oh, no, Kanim and Aslachness works. But Beis Charin is different, because there it's obvious that you're only giving it to the other person so that the father could get it. Who cares? But that's exactly the same thing over here. He doesn't want to give anything to his bad son. I'm only giving it to the bad son so that the grandchild could have. And even so, that's the Gemara's question, but Beis Charin. Beis Charin is essentially the same type of thing, where he's telling him, I'm not giving it to you, I'm only giving it to you that my father could come. And therefore, then the question then becomes, so what would be the difference between those two cases? That is the same case as Rav Nachman saying over here, where it's, I'm only giving it to you so that the grandchild could have it, just like Beis Charin, I'm only giving it to you so that my father could have it. So why does Rav Nachman say Kanam Nas Lachnas works? If it does, then Maisa Beis Charin should also work. So therefore, the Ran gives a different interpretation. He says what Rav Nachman would answer that Sudasim Achachas Alav is that when this mother, this father, is marrying off his child, everyone wants their parents, the grandparents, to be there by their child's wedding, because that's normative that they want their parents by their, when they're marrying off their own children. Now, therefore, it's obvious from the wedding meal that when this father is coming to the wedding meal, he wouldn't be coming to this other person. Who's this other person? You end up at the wrong wedding. You feel out of place. Why is he coming? He's coming because he's partaking from his son who's marrying off his son's wedding meal. Ah, so that's obvious that what's going on over here, that you're not really, in other words, the father is not getting it from this other person. And therefore, because what do you mean? If he was getting from the other person, meaning that it was this other person's wedding, he wouldn't be there. He's only being there because it's his son's. And then he's really having enough from his son, and that's why the Mishnah says Aser. But Rav Nachman says here, to the contrary, this father who had one good son, one bad son, he wants his son to get his inheritance. Not that it should not be the son's and rather be the grandson's, because that's how inheritance works. He wants his grandchild to have it. Now, how is his grandchild going to have it? When his son, meaning that child's father, who is his son, is going to get it. So therefore, yes, Kanim Nas Lahaknes works in that case, because he wants his son to have it. And that grandchild is getting it from his father. Whereas in our Mishnah, it's obvious from the meal, from a wedding, that why is this guy doing it at this wedding? He's not getting it from that person's wedding meal because he wouldn't come to that person's wedding. He's cutting it from his own son. And that's why it's forbidden in the case of a Mishnah, because although we say kani, but that's only when it's really going to the other person. In the case of Mishnah, it's not going to someone else. Now, sometimes Rav Nachman would give a different answer to Rava. And he would say that our Mishnah is not difficult on my halacha, by the Maisa Beis Charin, because Rabbi Eliezer, our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Eliezer. The Amma that he says, that even things which generally people look away, and people are permitted to have anah from other people, even without the explicit permission, but by mudah anah, it's forbidden. Now, as the Rambam explains, in the case of our Mishnah Beis Charin, there essentially has nothing to do with the concept of vitur. When someone's coming to eat by a wedding meal, that's real hanah. So what does he mean when he would answer that it's going like a Rebeleza vitur? It's just that he's comparing the logic of Rebbe Eliezer. In other words, just like Rebbe Eliezer is stringent by nedarim more than monetary law, because although by monetary law, a person could walk through someone else's field because people are not usually bothered by that. So it's permitted and there's no violation of theft. But whereas when someone makes a neder of hanah from someone else, then it's forbidden to go in this courtyard, so that makes it more stringent because essentially he's not having a monetary benefit because people are not usually particular about it. But when it comes to nedarim, to the halachas of vows, then we say, no, you are getting hanah from him. So that's what Rav Nachman would answer to Rava, that here also, that although in monetary law, the halacha is like me, like the case of this guy with his two sons, that according to the basic halacha, when you're doing konem, nas lahaknes is kaina. But because of the stringency of vows, that's why Rabbi Eliezer says in our Mishnah, like the Maisa Beis Charin, that it's not going to be a kinyan. Because although it is a kinyan of konem, nas lahaknes, but we say that because of the stringencies of neder, we say that no, because essentially it really is just to go to the mudar, to the father who's forbidden to have anah, and that's why we say it's not to have anah, but it's only because of the stringency of neder. But it doesn't reflect on this incident where we were discussing monetary law, which it would be a matana to his grandchild, because konem and asla haknes, Rav Nachman says, does work. But the Gemara continues asking Rav Nachman. It's not we learned in our Mishnah. Amr Chacham, the sages said, and this was what the conclusion after we brought down the Maisa Beis Charin, kol matana she'ena, any gift, that's not, meaning she'emekdesha te'emekudeshes, that if he would want to go ahead and be makdeshed, it wouldn't be kadosh. So then the Mishnah said, "Ein matana." So then that's not a gift, as we saw by the Maisa Beis Charin, where it was just a joke because that other person who said, "Okay, I'm making hektish," says, "Nah, you can't be makdish. I'm just giving you two that my father could come." Ah, then it's one big sham. Now that the Gemara asks, when it says "kol lisuyimai," what does it say that any gift? It sounds like it's including something. Lav lasuyah hamilsa, isn't it coming to include this case that we're debating with you about what you're arguing with the pumbedesai? That, and the gear says, the shamit kipe, regarding this son who is stealing these bundles of flax, and that what we see essentially from our Mishnah is, that even regarding the halacha of konem and asla haknes, that it's not kaina, and that it's because it's not totally his, and therefore it's not going to be considered a gift. And therefore we see not like you, Rav Nachman. So now the Gemara answers, lo, no. Lasuye lishna basra, the shmaiti, the rabbi, is coming to include something else, which was the second version of how we quoted Rav on Amad Aleph, that Rav said in that second version that even if the person of Beis Charin would have said, not Ella only, like as if it was a full-fledged condition, even if he says, look, the whole wedding meal and everything, the courtyard is yours, and just Yaveh Abba V'Yechel, let my father come and eat, even that is going to be forbidden, again, because as we explain, that although seemingly that's not a condition, so therefore it should be a valid gift, it's because, as we said, because it's Tzedas and Mechachas Lav, the meal illustrates by itself that really it's only a situation of conditional, and it's almost like you said explicitly that you're only doing it for that purpose. If you say explicitly, then that's pretty obvious that you're not really doing even a regular Konyam Nas Lahakdis, and that's why, even according to Rav Nachman, that's what the Mishnah is coming to include, that's not going to work. But a classical case of Konyam Nas Lahakdis, if you don't have an explicit illustration that you're not really giving it to that other person, and you're only doing it through harama, for subterfuge, to get the father, let's say, to come, then if you didn't have that element, like in the Maisa Beis Charin, then it would be mutter, and therefore Rav Nachman has resolved himself from the questions, and it could be that with the story of the good son and the bad son, that what the father said, that it should go to the bad son because of the good grandchild, that it could be a kinyan, as Rav Nachman holds, like we find by Sudr, that although it's not a real kinyan, it's only to get the next step, that is a valid kinyan. Hanu l'chashutvin, which I will turn to you, the fifth parak in Masechtas Nedarim, parak hashutvin.